Welcome to the Intersectionality Lab, a fair space to explore intersections.
Hello and welcome. My name is Inga, and with me today are Mariana Muskan and Almina. This episode is an unfiltered session. That means an unstructured conversation amongst the team from our intersectional lab about daily situations, current trends, or our own experiences, movies, books, and so on that stick in our mind in the sense of sharing is caring. In today's episode, we will talk about gender bias in AI, AI assistance, and digital domesticity. So, to give you a small introduction, in the past few years, AI has become an active part of our everyday lives. The first virtual personal assistants, VPAs, developed, like Alexa, Siri, Google Home, Cortana, and had intentionally exclusively woman voices or female voices. The companies did so because they found consumers prefer a woman's voice. For example, Amazon and Apple had researched academic literature on this matter and concluded that the female voice or a female voice is more soothing to the user, so marketing-wise, they followed that lead. However, the more the clients, the more the gender bias spread, even in this field. Why is it a soothing female voice in a role that serves without talking back, more comfortable and user-friendly? Most likely because we live in a sexist world. And now I would give the word to Mariana.
Hello. We have multiple examples with people interacting with chatbots, and we're going to mention them later on. But before we start, I'm going to ask you, how do you think people interacted with chatbots that were presented as female and apparently they couldn't talk back, as Inga mentioned already?
So I can go first. This is a really interesting topic because I haven't had a lot of thought about it. So I'm really excited for this discussion. But now, as we're mentioning it, I think that, of course, you know, the caring aspect and the gendered stereotypes of someone is more caring and submissive, and also the different power dynamics and the traditional male and woman, you know, this dynamic. I think that I don't know how to explain where I'm coming from right now, but this gives a certain power to the person who is using this female bot.
Yeah, there is indeed a power imbalance, and most of the users actually abuse this relationship, if I could call it that. We have multiple examples from the very first chatbots that were exclusively female. For example, Alexa's response to harassment was a soft beep, nothing aggressive, nothing like talking back or anything. And Siri used to reply as, "I'd blush if I could," if you say slur words to her. Another example is something that was supposed to be innovative 5 years ago or so from a Brazilian bank. They launched a chatbot as a customer support feature, and it was presented as female. She had a female name and everything, and she was supposed to serve people outside working hours. This bank at the moment had over 1 million clients, and almost 100,000 of them offended and harassed the chatbot because they actually had the opportunity to do it and took advantage of it. She received so much harassment that actually UNESCO had to make a case study about it and eventually launch a campaign against harassment because of this example. And what is interesting about this specific example is that when the chatbot actually had more reactive and strict responses to harassment, actually the verbal abuse to the system was reduced, which means people, I don't know, maybe realize what they were doing, that it wasn't like a program, or it was a program indeed, but it wasn't a female voice. They could, you know, say anything without anyone pointing out. After it started pointing it out, it actually had somehow a result.
But would you say kind of like the harshness or like the form of harassment changed in a sense, like maybe they still made inappropriate comments towards this chatbot, but less in a harassment, like harassing way?
I'm not sure exactly about the nature, but, you know, it was reduced, I suppose, by numbers. I mean, it was less. People probably insisted less. I mean, if they said something and the system responded, they wouldn't go further. Mm-hmm. So maybe, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you know what kind of responses they would get if they would kind of give offensive comments?
I don't have specific examples, but I know that she gradually, after the UNESCO case, she gradually, you know, started talking back, actually, mm-hmm. answering in a more, not in a so assertive way as the ones I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. No, I was just, because for me, I started thinking about what kind of reaction kind of engaged the change of people were less harassing, less commenting on the chatbot. So also like mm-hmm. answering it from to a daily perspective, no? Saying like what, I mean, harassment is, as we also said in the introduction, it's more or less because we live in a sexist world. So what kind of responses kind of help to reduce harassment overall, no? But
yeah, that would be interesting if we had this data, but we don't.
Yeah.
And something beyond the actual interaction with people, I mean, one-to-one interaction, was a Microsoft chatbot that was launched in 2016. She was presented as a 19-year-old girl, and the goal was to absorb as many data by users. They put it out there, and she was interacting with people, not actually one by one, but she was absorbing the, you know, the general atmosphere. And she was supposed eventually to be able to have a Twitter account and actually post tweets that were generated by herself, by itself. Mm-hmm. And it was only 16 hours after she was launched that she became a Nazi pedophile tweeting things, inappropriate things about the Holocaust and everything. So she was, of course, shut down almost less than a day after the launch.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really, really interesting because it, you know, it gives us a perspective of how it's not a preset thing. It's a thing that is vivid and vibrant, and it's within society. And if the data we give to it as a society, as people, individuals, but also collectively, it's what they're gonna, you know, use to evolve themselves. I don't know how to express it, but you understand.
Yeah, I find two things very interesting here. No, the first example you said were like, okay, these companies kind of set the frame of like female voices or kind of female representations as chatbots, as these responding, how do you call them, like Alexa or Siri, like the ones you can talk to?
Voice assistants,
right? So this is one thing, like, okay, if you start creating something, or if you think about the first navigation systems in cars, they were also female. And then mm-hmm. with the time, they developed different forms of voices, and you can choose if you want to have a male or a female voice or some celebrities and so on. And then, as you said, then you start feeding this AI, or like if we talk about AI and chatbots, that you start feeding the AI, and the AI starts to learn and develop a different character, or like kind of represents what happens also in society. And what came into my mind is like, I mean, usually when you interact with the chatbot, it's on an individual level. I mean, it's just you and the chatbot, but it seems like a lot of people respond in a quite similar way and start feeding this AI in a similar way. And I'm just, yeah, I'm also a bit shocked, no? Because like, I mean,
yeah,
if we talk about peer pressure or group pressure and people don't stand up when something is said, that's one thing. But if you are really in this kind of non-observative setting, you still interact in the same way. So
yeah,
it's very interesting also what you do out of using this frame of like, okay, you have a soothing female voice, and then what they do with it. I mean, how is it for you to hear these examples? Were you aware of these, let's say, phenomena?
I mean, these specific examples are really intriguing, like the one represented as a 19-year-old girl, and also the one the company had to shut down. I think it's interesting to see it from different viewpoints, like also the sexist viewpoint, but also that people aren't perceiving this AI tool as a human. They don't think it has feelings. So it has a lot like a dehumanizing role where they're like, oh, I can tell it whatever, I can harass it, I can, you know, release my anger, and this doesn't have feelings, which doesn't make it okay, of course. But it's super interesting to understand why people are doing this. And also, I think that as this is becoming more and more popular, that there will be even more studies done about it. And to understand the sexist role, I think that it would be different if the AI bot is presented as a female or male as well. And this example with the 19-year-old girl, like they said that she was 19. It's so specific, like, you know, the age where usually, I don't know, girls are considered so attractive and young and naive, you know, so... Wow, I can't believe they actually gave her an age, but it's also something we need to consider. So what are your thoughts on that?
This one was a bit different than the others because she wasn't supposed to be like an assistant or whatever. She was supposed to be, mm-hmm. you know, an existence that would socialize. She had a complete profile. That's why she had a name and an age and everything. She also has an avatar, as far as I remember. I'm not sure about that. But she was like a complete profile that was supposed to socialize and evolve into a character, I don't know, and tweeting her opinions. So this one was really, really specific, as you mentioned. And of course, she had an idea that could be anything, but of course she had to be a team. I mean, a girl. I mean, come on. Male developers, right?
And I mean, it's also interesting that companies or developers kind of use sexist structures or misogynist structures in society to also make money out of it, no? If you also think about some games that are highly sexist, or like, I think you told me an example about avatars and you can build your avatars.
Yes, there is a specific website that you can build your own AI boyfriend or girlfriend. And there were specific examples of like 50 or 60 year old men that had a 16 or 18 or 19 year old girl as an AI girlfriend. And it was a construct that you could build, you know, ideally, I guess. It wasn't an actual person, an actual teen or minor that was hurt. But a 60 year old man had an example of like what he would ideally have as a girlfriend was a teen girl, mm-hmm. you know, very specifically dressed and presented. And you can imagine.
Yeah.
It's alarming.
It's really alarming. And I mean, like, as you said in the example before, it just took 16 hours after the launch, and then they had to shut it down already. It's crazy, no? And then, I mean, also, because Amina, you were saying that it's kind of like it's super dehumanizing, but I think this happens in society and in reality a lot, no? Like, especially female bodies get super dehumanized. Everyone feels they have the right to comment on a body, either online or catcalling in the streets, and relatives, friends, and close people also commenting on female bodies. And it's also about appearances and being somehow submissive and fit in a certain frame, and to be like this still sitting, nice, replying person, you know? So it's also super dehumanizing because you just serve in this picture of females, no? You like, you have this idea of you're just there for serving and soothing and caring.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to the dehumanization, like studying, you know, the psychology of intercultural and intergroup relations in general, we can understand how people dehumanize other groups, and in this case, also females. And it's interesting to see through AI as well, because yes, people also have that factor of, oh, this isn't a real person. But then there's also those elements, as you say, of even when it is a person, we can really see this happening, like people putting down women, or when they have these assistant or secretary roles, which are, let's say, common because of those stereotypes, as they're helping, they're nurturing, etc. It becomes problematic that people are somehow justifying this. And I'm wondering if, like, of course, they intentionally chose female voices for this, but how intentional were they with keeping these problems in mind and these stereotypes in mind? Like, were they understanding the damage that is coming from this? So what are your thoughts about that?
Maybe Muskan. Hi. You managed to
join. I actually wanted to talk about earlier when you guys were talking about why maybe they do these comments about the first question, which I wanted to say was like, I think they're also meaner to like AI, especially because she's not really going to answer back, you know, because they're already like, we're supposed, like, as a woman, they think it's like subservience and like serving, but then also they're usually not programmed to like answer back, or they don't have any repercussions. I mean, it's not like the AI is going to come out and like, you know, scream at them back if they're being sexist or rude or misogynistic. So I think people are then like more bold, you know, even though in real life they would maybe most likely never do it, you know, because they know somebody might punch them in the face. But it's just that they know that it's a chat box somewhere in a server which will not touch them. So they're like, yeah, hell, we're going to go with this. But coming back to the question, it slipped out of my mind. Can you ask me the question again? Because I was thinking of my answer from before. that Almina and like Almina was talking about.
Oh, I was talking about, like, do you think they were aware of how problematic this would be when they were choosing it?
No, yeah. I don't think so, honestly. I don't think that it was, like, I think it was, like, a subconscious decision when they were programming it. But in a really bad stereotyped way, these are just, like, men who've never actually maybe thought about the repercussions. You know, it's like in the social network, when in the first scenes, in the social network, the character is like, the character gets dumped, and then she says, "You're really smart and you're gonna do great things, but people are not going to like you because you're an, you know, you're a bad person." And I think that's this, it's a similar sort of a case where maybe they don't have the awareness of what they're doing when they're putting into it into like production. You know, it came to them naturally because that's what maybe they had always been taught, or they had seen, or they had learned. And that because they never thought of it consciously, they never put like any sort of like warnings or like something to like fix it. Do you get what I'm trying to say? That's my opinion.
Can we add something to what Almina was talking about, that it's like it's not an actual person and it's an AI and it's a, you know, not an actual person. We have a real good example about this, which is borderline. It's on the border between virtual reality and actual people, and it's the metaverse. It was launched like 5 years ago or so. Do you remember that you could actually turn your Facebook profile into an avatar? And the metaverse was like a huge open space that all people coexisted in peace and whatever. You know, they were promoting as a breakthrough and that it's something really unique and everybody will want to do this and everything. But again, those people that were saying that were male developers who had like the luxury of ignorance. However, almost all the women that joined reported that their avatar was sexually harassed like within the first hour they joined the space. And even the head of research of Meta herself, she reported like it took her 60 seconds to be assaulted by the moment she joined. So this is very problematic, and even though those people were avatars, but behind the avatar was an actual profile and an actual person, this didn't stop people by being their real self in a virtual place, you know, with other people. And what is most alarming, again, it's not the fact that this happened, because this is like, I feel this is a reflection of real life. For example, women in a bus or whatever, women in the outside world. So our avatars in the virtual world, it's okay. I mean, it's not okay, definitely, but it's the same. It's something to be expected, at least. That's what I wanted to say. But when, you know, when they discussed it and the female tech developer said, we need like a moderation mechanism or something to stop people to like protect my personal space or whatever, even if it's virtual. You know, the male developers that, you know, constructed this in the first place, they were like, oh, this is not cool, this is undemocratic, this is an open forum and everyone, you know, we should be able to handle conflict and disagreement. Those are the comments for harassment, conflict and disagreement, and women, you're not able to handle this, which is again disappointing.
So they were posing that, or stating that the female avatars and then the person behind, they have to handle it by themselves.
No, I mean, when this became an issue and the female tech developer said that, you know what, we need something to protect ourselves, a moderation mechanism, they presented it as undemocratic and, you know, censorship or whatever. What we usually hear about moderation
online. Like free speech? They were pulling that card, maybe?
Sorry?
Free speech?
Yeah, exactly. And it was supposed to be, the way it was launched and promoted, it was supposed to be like an open space and everyone will join and we will live happily ever after. But when this didn't happen, because it was a reflection of society, actually, they were disappointing that women were standing their ground and they were like, oh, I don't want anyone around my avatar, you know? If this is an open space and this represents myself, I want to have my you know, yeah. And they found it not cool. Because it wasn't as they imagined.
No, but I mean, it's also just kind of mirroring what also happens in discourses in our society about how to protect people that get harassed in any form, no? And discriminated. And then it's always like that people tend to give this argument, as you said, Muskan, like, but then you kind of go against freedom of speech without knowing that freedom of speech, the whole concept is completely different. And you don't have the freedom to harass, discriminate, or insult someone in any case. But yeah, I like it's interesting that even though it was a team of seems like mixed developers, and the female developers were saying like we need some control mechanisms, that still the male colleagues were against it and saying like this is not democratic and so on. Instead of like if you really have the vision of creating a space where everyone can just join and enjoy the space and the interaction, then you should also be able to reflect and take this feedback and say like, okay, how can we make this space safe for everyone and not only for cis men.
Yeah.
I mean, I think because I'm kind of glad it flopped. I don't think we need it right now. I think this is going to be really dark, but I think we need the metaverse in like maybe 80 years when like we have no resources left on Earth and the only thing that is left is us in like a virtual reality device, which is like covering our face and we're living online because there's no like good park to go to on a good sunny day. That's, I think, when we should be using it, not right now when the days are still good. And also, like, when maybe they realize that moderation is still important. I mean, online spaces are always monitored and moderated by peers. Like, on Reddit, almost every sub is being moderated by one human somewhere in, like, in the globe. Like, it's not like everything is, like, completely free. And then on spaces where it is not moderated, things like 4chan, like, we have heard about the things that are posted there. It's for like everybody's benefit, I think. It's not even just the women, because like if it was unmoderated, even I think at one point, if there's no women on the platform, men will get harassed and then they will cry about it. And then they'll be like, maybe we should bring back moderation. It's just that they're not being harassed, so they don't really care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it's really what you say also, what you said earlier of hiding behind the screen. And then with the deep issue of, you know, misogyny and sexism, it's like a recipe for disaster almost.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. But then I would like to ask a question, give a question into the group. So we kind of agree it's kind of mirroring what is happening in society and maybe some deep-rooted thoughts in society and some opinions maybe. But would you also say that kind of how we treat AI is a mirror of our society and gender bias that goes beyond the technology of it? Saying that, I mean, we agree somehow it's mirroring, but could you also say how it is mirroring? I mean, we came up with a lot of things already, no? Like, because we are still living in a patriarchal sexist society and very exclusive, almost, Khan, what you said, it's super important that cis men are not targeted, so then there's no control mechanism, no research about, you know, like, as we know, for example, for health issues, male health issues are quite well researched, but everything beyond cis men, it's not researched at all because there's no need for it, kind of. But then, of course, there's a huge need and it's starting to increase maybe. But yeah, do you see more reasons for that or kind of like how we treat AI?
I think there's definitely good sides to it. I think like I have heard a lot of people also say things like, oh, whenever I use ChatGPT, I say hello, I say how are you, I say thank you when they help me out. So I think there's also like these sort of good things, but these are like small things. I mean, this would be considered manners, no? So it's like the bare minimum of like human interaction or like any interaction. But then if you look at it in contrast to like the harassment, because the harassment I think is so severe, I think we tend to also like ignore the good parts or maybe the nicer parts of AI being used. Like I think that's what is my perspective for sure. Like I tend to focus on like the harassment part more, which is being easily mirrored in society and then also in AI. But for good examples, like in my brain, I think the being polite to the AI is like my 10 cents here.
Mm-hmm. Are you afraid of a potential Skynet?
I will be the first one to like lay down and I'll be like, you can do whatever. I don't think as humans, as a species, we're not good species, I think. We're really bad for so many other species. Food cycles exist for a reason, mm-hmm. and like we're disrupting it. And I don't mind human extinction.
But I'm also always very polite to AI, just in case at one point they will take over. At least I was friendly to them somehow. Or like, I don't know. I mean, we don't know. At one point, maybe they kind of are able to develop a more conscious way that we can also understand. No, I mean, there are probably different ways of consciousness. We don't know yet. No. So because for me, it's always like a bit this, how you treat every being also reflects how you want to be treated, and also how you kind of have your standpoint towards another being. And for me, AI somehow is also a form of being, because we see that they are already getting more and more intelligent. And as you said, they are can be very useful, and you can work with them together in a very useful way. But therefore, we also have to be nice. I'm definitely a person saying always, hi, how are you? Thank you very much. Have a good day. And I mean, then AI also responds super nice, so it can also give you something back, no? And especially if we are heading towards more loneliness and more societal isolation, it can be also quite nice. And if you have a bad day, and then at least ChatGPT is nice to you, sometimes it also lightens the hour up a bit.
Mm-hmm. Because even if that chatbot is like, you know, it's not a human, it's still, from your part, is a dialogue in your everyday life. So it tells things about you, even if someone doesn't actually take it. I mean, it's your reality in any case. So
yeah, I think that like what you are all saying has a lot to do with like intentional use, and also being like, you know, more aware of what we as it doesn't have, you know, feelings doesn't give us a justification to treat it a certain way. But like hearing all this, I had two different thoughts. Like one is the need for the mirroring aspect. It's the need to label something as having a certain gender, even if it's like AI. Like, why did it have to have a gender in the first place? I mean, I know the voice needed to be something, and it was a great marketing strategy and a business strategy for like, oh, a woman, you know, people find the voice more soothing and everything. But for example, ChatGPT that we usually text, we don't hear the voice of. I've never thought of it having a gender. Like, it never crossed my mind as something it would have. So I think that, of course, I understand the business and marketing behind it, but that I also see the mirroring of having to label something. And then I'm also thinking about the joke Inga made of like, if they take over the world or something, maybe we'll also view it as a threat, you know, like AI, something that we're still not, we're not sure how far it can go and everything. So people are also scared of it as a way. So maybe we'll soon have the term like AI phobia or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as we know that it's most likely that people act against something they're afraid of also, no? That, or like it's something unknown, and say they start to resist against it just because it's unknown and they don't know what to expect. Do you have anything else you would like to share around this topic before we move to the last segment, or is there anything you would like to add?
No, not for my side.
I had a point, but it slipped my mind. It was there when we were talking, but now I don't remember.
When we'll come back, it will come back. Because my last thought on what Amina just said kind of already is the connection to what I would like to bring into this episode, as we always have this final segment of connect and reflect, and we bring something we read or watched or came across. And I mean, I have to do a disclaimer in the beginning, because I mean, I also wasn't really able to finish the series because it's quite violent, but it just perfectly portrays how violent we treat AI as we have the opportunity to do so. And I started to watch the series Westworld. I don't know if you have heard of it. And it's in US American series, and it's about that they kind of started to create a virtual reality, but where you can really be physically with your body in the world. So it's kind of like a simulation of a Western world. And then they also have like these avatars, and they are called hosts, and you can go on adventures with them in this like landscape and so on, and you can't die. I mean, you can do shootings, but you, of course, you're not hurt because the guns are not, but you can shoot the host, for example, or do violence to them, and then they go back to the lab, they got refreshed kind of, and go back to the world again. And then at one point it turns out that people just don't want to go on adventure. They really they rape the host, they kill them in a very violent way, and they take over the world like the humans. And then it kind of like the whole concept over 30 years develops as something that people can go there and show their worst self and kind of act out against the hosts. And then like the question is a bit of this, like, if you give people the space to act out somewhere, is it maybe better because then they don't do it against humans? That was kind of like the argument of the developers. But then in the end, it turned out the host developed a consciousness. So they started remembering what people done to them, what they experienced, where they were acting. And then, of course, they start to fight against it. And then war breaks out between the human and the host. And then they start, or they're trying to claim their independence, and that they also get recognized as beings that feel and memorize, have connections to each other, fall in love, have children, and so on. And I mean, I like the core idea, but still, it's a very US American series. So I don't know, depends on you like. And with the increasing episodes, it starts to get more and more violent, which is the idea behind it. But just for someone who's not like me, I'm very sensitive watching things, and I really had like a pillow always with me, but I also couldn't stop watching. But I, yeah, like it reflects a bit what we were talking about, no? That if you give people kind of a space, they start acting out in even ways that we didn't expect yet. So that would be mine.
But I always wonder why do people always somehow manage to resort to like sexual assault? Like why? What is up with these people? Like, why do you want to violate another human? Like, I want to do a lot of things. I want to, like, if there was a simulation where I wouldn't die, I would go to space. I would rock climb without anything. You know, that's what I would do. Why do you want to violate, even though it's a simulation, the host? Like, why would you? That's just, it's so sickening. It makes me mad. Yeah, anyway, sorry. Anybody else wants to?
I think what you said raises the bigger question of, you know, ethical question. It reminds me of a movie, The Purge. Do you remember mm-hmm. that? It was a society that one day per year, you could do any illegal thing like kill, steal, whatever, and you had no consequences. Mm-hmm. And the next day you continued your life as a small community without any consequences, and you waited for next year to do the same. So, you know, it's the ethical question. If you cannot fix it, can you somehow, you know, make it, channel it to, you know, a specific way because you accept the fact that it's going to happen? Mm-hmm. So channel it or control it in a specific way. As you said, for example, in your example, let's send it to the AI so less people are hurt. But still, the issue remains. I mean, the main issue remains that some people have those needs, if I can name them needs. But in any case, yeah, some people want to do bad.
Yeah, could be a whole episode about it because I'm also not sure what I don't know how is my opinion about this. Interesting. Mm-hmm. What did you brought? I'm curious, what do you brought?
So for me, I was thinking of two books / mostly books, I guess, and then they became like they were adapted out into like TV series or movies. First is this is like the background of the book, but in Dune by Frank Herbert, they have this mention of AI being used. It's not mostly based on gender, but it's more based on just the use of AI, to be honest. But they used AI so much at one point that they were that the AI sort of gained consciousness, and then they had a war against the AI, which eventually led to the banning of AI. So then, to replace the thinking machines that was called in the universe, they basically trained human minds so that they became as smart as an AI, as like computers. And then those people were specifically like taken to like corporations or to like the royal families of the universe. And they would work as the calculators and the machines. And that was my thought when I saw like AI and, you know, it wasn't gender-based, but yeah, that's what I thought of. And the other one was also, again, it's mostly like AI versus humans. That's what I was thinking of, which was I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. It's a book. It's a really depressing book. And there, again, humans had AI. They developed it. And then there was a world war using AI between the countries. And then in the end, only one thinking machine survived, like one AI survived. And then that machine, essentially trigger warning, but it essentially tortured four, I think, or five humans for like the rest of time as much as that AI could. Like they would, if the AI would keep them alive, then it would use different methods to like torture the human. And I feel like this is not relevant to the conversation exactly, but I just, both of, like in, I have no mouth and I must scream. It's more of a masculine AI. It technically has no gender. But when the author wrote it, like there were female characters in the book, a female human character who's being tortured, but then the AI itself has no gender. So it's also, in a way, if you think about it, it's interesting to see that maybe the author couldn't come up with the fact that the torturing AI could be maybe a female, you know, and instead they chose to keep it neutral and not pivot to maybe like a specifically male AI, because I think that's way more possible anyway. So those are my two recommendations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, they sound super interesting with both of your examples. I haven't watched them, so I would really love to watch some more movies or like read books that are connected to the topic and reflected and connected to what we were talking about. So the one I was thinking of is a movie from like 2014. It's called Ex Machina. I think it's kind of popular. You might have watched it, but it's about like a programmer that gets a chance to be a part of this strange science experiment where he has to conduct tests and assess artificial intelligence. And he does this by interacting with a female robot. So looking at it through the lens of everything we talked about, that you can see like a lot of, you know, gender bias in AI, power dynamics, control. And I think that it really raises the concern about how intentional are we with developing AI? And as you also mentioned before, the ethical considerations that we need to be aware of. So I think that this movie really connects to all of this that we were talking about. And I had another thought that I just thought of now. It's not really connect and reflect. It's just like also a thought of a series that I thought of. So if you watched SpongeBob, which I watched a lot of as a kid, Karen the computer.
Whoa! Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that they made the robot a wife and a female, but this was like so long ago before we even had all of these voice assistants and stuff. So, I mean, maybe it can also be a recommendation for someone if they like cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this reminded me, there used to be this Indian TV series, which also like they developed a robot, but it was a baby girl, like a child. And then, I mean, she was a robot, but I guess you could also think of her as an AI, you know? And she was a baby girl, but she was like, her name, the TV series was called Karishma Ka Karishma, which is like the miracle's miracle, because her name was also Karishma. So she was a miracle, and then she would do like miraculous things. But I think that's more of like a positive take, you know, because they wanted a daughter so bad that they were like, oh, we will get a robot as a child. I think it was an adaptation of an English TV series, but I don't know the original TV series names. But yeah.
And you, Mariana.
I brought the movie Hair from 2013 because I find it super impressive that it's less than a little more than a decade that it was written as a science fiction movie, but now you actually have the opportunity to have an AI girlfriend, and yeah, it impresses me and maybe even somehow scares me what things were science fiction 10 years ago and today are reality. This was so close, and we didn't have a single idea back in 2013 when we watched this movie. And I also, because while researching for this, I found another website that if some people you had a relationship of any kind dies, there's a website, like a database, where you upload your whole conversation so far. And this, it's again like a chat, an AI chat, that like grasps the way you used to talk and how this person was. And you can keep chatting with them like they're not dead. So this reminded me of a Black Mirror episode, again from 2013, which was called Be Right Back. And it was, I don't know if you watch it, but it was a girl, a woman that her boyfriend dies, and she orders a replica online from Silicon, like they had the same marks, the same face and everything. Yeah, and now you have the opportunity to somehow, you cannot get a replica yet, but you can get like a conversation replica, which is impressive.
Mm-hmm. Also, another Black Mirror episode came into my head, which is called Striking Vipers. I don't know if you know it, but like it's also that they kind of, I mean, they are like two best friends and they're in a game and playing with avatars, with virtual reality, and then they start to experience kind of gay attraction in this game, and then they start over years to meet up and have like sexual intercourses, and both are married to like in a heteronormative marriage, and then at one point they stop, but somehow they still feel like they're missing it. So it's also ironic that they can live their gay attraction and their like sexual exploration in this virtual reality, but they never talked about in reality, even though also not between the two of them. And then at one point they lose contact, and they kind of like one cuts the contact because they're saying like it interferes with their marriage, and I don't know, and probably confused about what they feel. But it also just came into my mind, which is also kind of in this, you can create an avatar and then maybe practice or live out desires that you are not able to do in your, let's say, daily reality.
Yeah. I just also had another one in my mind. It was just another movie that was, it just came out last year, and I remember I saw the poster of it. It starred Megan Fox, and the movie is about like Megan Fox is like this AI cyborg humanoid sort of like a person, and like a married couple brings her in as a nanny, but then she becomes like hostile, and then she's like, oh, I want to replace the wife, and I want to, you know, take the wife's place. And I think honestly, like knowing Hollywood, I feel like that's maybe like a fantasy that somebody here is trying to like reproduce. But the movie is literally called Subservience, so there you go. But it could also be a satire, I'm not really sure, like depends on what lens you view it with, you know. So I think, yeah, sorry, I mean, what were you saying?
I haven't watched the one you mentioned, Muskan, but I watched all the Black Mirror episodes because I really love the series. But like all of the episodes and movies you just mentioned, they're just so creepy to me, because you become aware of like this actually, you know, happen, and in the sense of it's just creepy how far it's going and like these ideas have, and it also makes me scared.
Yes. I mean, I also have to admit, I love Black Mirror, but then I can always watch one or two episodes, and then I have to give it a bit time because it also freaks me out a bit. Because as you said, no, it's like kind of fictional, but then on the other hand, it's super real. And if you really think about and look at old Black Mirror series or episodes like a decade ago, and you look at now, like what is the offer of like websites where you can replicate loved ones that died and so on. So it's, yes.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, we had many, many suggestions. We will anyways put them in the show notes so you can also check them out. And kind of to wrap this episode up and what I'm taking away from this talk, and also thank you, Mariana, for this research and the preparation of the episode, that AI does not come with predetermined amount of prejudice or sexism. It's more that it adapts to the amount of existing prejudice it observes in the end. And it starts as like AI starts as a, let's say, newborn baby, and is trained mimicking what is happening around and is socially acceptable. And then, of course, the input data is the data that we feed in. And according to the experts, and even if we launch a software that was not sexist or racist, it would be gradually adapting to the society's level of sexism and racism and become one. So what that means, that we also, if we feed the AI a non-sexist input, we won't solve the problem, but we can start changing the behavioral patterns as well, no? As we are having the power of also giving certain input into these developments. And I would say that brings us to the end of the episode. We hope that today's episode was interesting, and we would love to get your comments or recommendations. And as always, thank you for listening to the Intersectionality Lab.
Thank you for listening to the Intersectionality Lab. If some terms or topics made you curious, check out our website. Maybe some of the resources will keep your thoughts rolling. Meet us where the lines cross. We are a non-profit research center working on human rights, gender equality, and active citizenship. And this podcast was created with the support of our team.